Any yes. Can we have the microphone there?
Yeah, my name is Charles Eisland with the World Resources Institute. Several people, including Dr. Briscoe, have mentioned the need for establishing water allocations as they've done in Australia, and for water prices that reflect the true value of water. And we can imagine that if we were to do that, we'll have transformation of water resources from agriculture to higher value uses. Dr. Clay has also talked about reflecting prices, the embedded water in prices of food. Perhaps that's what you were suggesting. And as maybe one of those semi-single issue organizations, I'm in principle in favor of that because I want to do something to preserve water. But what do we do about the cost for poor people in the form of higher food prices, less food produced, higher water prices? How do we reconcile that problem, which will likely accompany the suggested reforms you're suggesting?
Thank you.
Well, I think one of the things that we need to understand is that a lot of poor people produce food, and it's not necessarily going to be a hardship for them to have higher prices for food. Nobody, very few people, let's say, are truly self-sufficient, but generally higher prices for food could, in fact, have interesting implications for resources and assets globally, I think. And so I would want to look there, but if part of that price or much of that price is because of increased prices for carbon and increased prices for agricultural inputs because of carbon prices and increased prices for water, there's going to be precious little left for producers at the end of the day. So this is a real issue. And maybe the issue has got to be that we begin to look at how producers can scale up through asset development and equity types of investments into larger units that aggregate and add value, and where there's a little more control over some of those issues. You know, I don't have a crystal ball here any more than anybody else does. We have some pretty serious problems, and it is going to take a little thinking to figure out how to deal with them, and it's going to be very different probably in different parts of the world. But what we see now is countries, I think, even like China, that basically are importing an increasing amount of what they need. But what they're actually importing is water and soil, which they don't have. And that reality is becoming more common, and with climate change likely to become even more so.
Mark, would you like to
add? If I could just add a few comments to those. I think the other thing is that what we're seeing is that water is leaving agriculture under any circumstances, and what's happening is you're seeing it basically expropriated for industrial and urban uses without proper compensation to farmers. But I actually don't advocate, say, charging high direct prices to farmers. What I would argue is that you need to, first of all, recognize the water rights, which is not easy, as you know, but then to buy those water rights as necessary from farmers. And you do get a dynamic process going. It was also shown in this study that John cited in India that you do then can improve the efficiency of use of water in agriculture and reinvest some of the proceeds of the purchases into the agriculture sector and to get dynamic changes in productivity. Some people will lose, but broadly there I think are going to be larger gains than under the current systems that we're having.
One other thing to follow up on that is if we have a system of payments for carbon that are based on avoided carbon loss, why couldn't we begin to think about a system of water payments that are based on avoided water use that really recompenses producers for becoming more efficient? Now, this would have to work within a watershed level rather than at a global level because water is a local issue and scarcity is more of a local issue, although an increasingly common one.